Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 41 of Sea Monsters and Golden Hair.
Hello and welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Ruth.
And I'm Gary. This show continues with the story of Puich, Prince of Dyved, from the first branch of the Mabinogi. But before we get on with the story, the contact details.
If you'd like to send us a message or some feedback, drop us a line at garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com or give us a ring on 001-206-666-3775. That's 001-206-666-3775.
Yes. Do you remember that I said in our last show that folks could ring us directly from within our app?
Yes.
Well, I was wrong. You can ring us directly from within the Apple iOS podcast app. Or their built-in...
Oojumiflip.
Yeah, Oojumiflip. Hmm. Whatever it is. But it's built into iOS 8. Otherwise, just give us a ring from your phone as normal.
Right. OK, well, now we've got that out of the way. You can also have a look at the show notes for this episode at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com because they'll tell you more about the episode you're listening to.
That's true. They contain details of our sources and a list of the characters' names so you can see how the strange-sounding names look written down.
There's also a map of medieval Wales, showing the area the story takes place in at the time when the manuscripts of the Mabinogion were first written down.
Oh, that all sounds really good. So, have we got any news and views?
Let you know that the next story show is going to be the finale for the story of Puich, the first branch of the Mabinogion. But there might be a surprise first.
Oh, that's brilliant. But what do you mean, surprise?
Well, we've got a rather special show planned, haven't we?
Oh, yes. Oh, well, that will be worth waiting for. But what about our other news?
I was coming to that.
Okay.
You know, we haven't had a competition for a little while.
Yes.
Well, I thought it was about time we had one. But more of that later.
Exciting stuff. So, keep your ears peeled at the end of the show for details about our competition.
And now, the story. So let's find out what happened in the last episode.
In our last episode, Puich and Rhiannon have returned from the otherworldly court of Hyveidd Hen. And the realm of Dyved begins to prosper. But as the third year of their reign starts to unfold, the people begin to cry out for an heir. Puich bargains for a year's grace before he must divorce Rhiannon, and during that time, the couple are blessed with the birth of a son. On the first night, however, as Rhiannon sleeps, the child is mysteriously spirited away. The nursemaids, who should have been watching over the child, come up with an evil plan to make it look as if Rhiannon has destroyed her own child. Rhiannon passed many days in her quiet suffering outside the gates of Arbeth, and there was nothing that Puich could do to end it for her. Elsewhere in the land, life continued much as it always had. However, something strange was occurring far off to the east, in the province of Gwent. Gwent was a neighbour to Dyved, and there the land between the peaks was densely forested, and the people lived in either beyond the wood, below the wood, or the Gwent wood itself. The coastline of those living below the wood was washed by the great grey tidal surge that flowed like the living hand of the mother far up into the heart of Gridain. Known as the Havren, in honour of the ancient princess who drowned there, it carried boats from far-off lands laden with treasures for trading, and yet the Cantref of below the wood was mostly known for being people with farmers and fishermen. On the far side of the roiling waters lay the land of summer and its castle of glass. A careful relationship was maintained with this magical and fey-touched land, with much trade and the fostering of many fine sons and daughters. The prince of Gwentiscoid, or Gwent below the wood, was known as Tirnon, and he was both elderly and held in high regard. He was as changeable as the sea itself, being both soft and nurturing, and yet with an anger and ferocity that kept his borders safe. It was perhaps for this reason they named him Tirnon Turvliant, the Lord of the Thundering Waters. The memories of his people were long, and the descendants of the old tribes, the Silures, or the Kindred as they called themselves, still dwelt in the hidden places. But after the coming of the armies of iron, bringing their so-called peace, and before the coming of the noble Griffith Ap Llywelyn, Tirnon and his wife ruled the land wisely, and their people loved them. Delwyn, Pwyll's most trusted true companion and his sister-daughter, was bloodkin to Tirnon, and the Prince of Gwent had been a close friend and ally to Pwyll for many years. Pwyll thought him one of the best men in the world. However, many were the years since Tirnon and his wife had borne naught but daughters, and like Pwyll, his people were beginning to wonder whether he should step down in favour of one of his other sons, as the mature couple's time of fertility seemed to have passed from them. They both accepted that the time for this was soon approaching, but in the meantime they ruled and ran their farmlands with joy in their hearts. All of Tirnon's true pride and joy lay in the herd of fine and proud horses that he and his wife raised. In all the lands, there were no stallions or mares more handsome than those of Tirnon Turvliant. With great love, he nurtured the best and most beautiful and proud mare, and each year she became full with foal. Every year, her time for birthing came as the festival of Beltane, or Calan Mai, burst into life around them. People celebrated and feasted in joy, and Tirnon watched the mare with pride for as long as he could. Each year, as the second night of the festival started to wane, the revelers heard a terrible cracking noise of breaking timbers and the horrible sounds of a horse in distress. And no matter how fast the men ran to the stables, the poor mare's colt was nowhere to be found. All they could see was that the wall of the stable had been torn asunder by something of great strength, and that the poor mare had both delivered and lost her foal. The pain in Tirnon's heart was intense. On the first eve of the same Beltane that Pwyll and Rhiannon suffered so terribly, Tirnon sat with his wife in their great hall, pondering deeply about their losses over his cup of mead. And he stroked the grey at his temples as he looked up at her and said,
"My wife, does it not strike you that we are careless? We are losing our mare's offspring every year, without keeping even the one of them."
"Yes, but what can we do about it?"
"Let the gods curse me if they will, but I must find out what fate befalls these foals. You know that tonight is the beginning of Calan Mai."
"Aye, that it is, my lord."
"Tonight, I shall make a stall for her, right here in this hall, and I shall watch over her all night to see what occurs.
Are you sure that is wise, my lord?
Maybe not, my love, but it is what I have to do.
Then I shall retire, my lord, and wish you all blessings.
So he stood and began issuing orders to his servants and his retinue. A wooden stall was built, water was brought, and hay plentiful for the mare was laid about and placed in a manger. And then Tiranon himself led the mare into the great hall. He loosely looped her halter over one of the new supports and dragged his chair closer to the stall. He sat down heavily and started to eat the bread and honey left for him by his confused and wary servants. And then he sat back with a slow, simmering anger and waited. After the long summer evening, dusk began to fall inside the hall, and Tiranon's eyelids began to droop. A retainer lit two of the torches around the walls to throw a little light into the gathering darkness. As the flickering red shadows seemed to grow in strength, so did the movements of the mare, and Tiranon shook himself awake, standing in pride as his prized mare gave birth to the most beautiful and perfect bay colt that he had ever seen. Just as he strode forward to assist her and the already standing foal, there came a tremendous impact on one of the huge window shutters of the great hall, as if they'd been struck by an enormous fist. At the second blow, the shutter caved in, scattering shards of wood throughout the hall. A huge, scaly arm thrust its way through the window, dark, perhaps green or grey in the ruddy light, covered in seaweed and dripping wet. The huge arm grasped for the foal, wrapping its size-long claws about the young colt's mane. Tiernan drew his sword with a war cry and chopped down hard upon the bulging tendons of the huge, dripping arm. His anger lent him strength, and his blade shore straight through the thick, muscled arm at the elbow. The foal and the severed arm dropped back to the floor. A hideous and unearthly scream came from outside the hall, along with the sounds of strange and unearthly magics. The red fury rose within him, and he burst through the doors, calling for his guards to accompany him. Far ahead, they could hear the crashing of trees as something huge forced its way through the woods, and they ran after it. But nobody caught a clear sight of the beast as the darkness had now settled thickly about them. They came to a halt, all beginning to whisper in hushed tones about the uncanny nature of Tiernan's story. And it was then that he remembered that the doors to the great hall had been left thrust wide open. They rushed headlong back to the hall and were overjoyed to see the colt with its mother, who nuzzled and nudged it gently, occasionally sniffing down at a small bundle of rich golden silk at her hooves. Tiernan started to walk towards the mare and her bundle, and of a sudden recognised what was inside the bundle. He turned to his men and ordered them back to their beds, or back to their posts, and to take the colt into care at the stable. The huge arm was nowhere to be seen, and many of his retinue scratched their beards and wondered whether their lord was in danger of losing his mind, for they all knew what had happened to the mare's foal at this time in previous years. Once he was alone, Tiernan reached down and with such huge but tender hands picked up the tiny bundle, gazing into the bright face of a newborn babe. He stroked the baby's moist forehead and wrapped its golden brocaded silk tightly about the boy child for warmth. A little hand slipped out of the coverings, keeping a close watch on the shadows. Tiernan made for the passageway that led to his chambers and bolted the door after himself. He threw his cloak over his breast, covering the bundle, and ordered the attendants away as he went to his wife's chambers, again lowering the bar on the door after he had entered. He peered down at the beautiful face of his wife as she lay there looking up at him, and gently asked,
"Lady, Are you sleeping?
Oh, no, my lord. I was asleep, but I woke when you came in.
I know how dearly you would have loved to have had a son, my love. Look, here is one for you if you would have him.
My lord, but what do you mean by this? How has this occurred?
Listen, and I shall tell you, my love.
She took the babe and soothed him as Tiernan related all the events of the evening, her eyes growing wider as the tale unfolded. Her hands plucked at the beautiful satin that the boy was wrapped in, and her eyes caressed the golden curls, already thick on the child's head.
Tell me true, my lord. What sort of garments are these?
'Tis a mantle of silk.
Then he is indeed a boy of noble lineage, but... Oh, my husband, let him be our child. He'll bring me great joy and fill my days with such diversion and mirth. Let me call my ladies to me, and I will talk to them. Let my ladies and I prepare the way, and we can tell the court that I have been pregnant. We can tell the court we chose to tell no one, lest we lost the child in carrying.
If that is your wish, my lady, I will readily agree with you on this.
And so it was done. And all of the people rejoiced that the prince and his queen had a son. And the boy was blessed at his naming ceremony, and they gave him the name of Gwri Gwallt Euryn, that is, Gwri of the golden hair, for his hair seemed to shine like a golden crown, just as if it were glowing with a light all of its own.
In our next episode, Rhiannon's punishment comes to an end, and a new worry is revealed.
Goodness, that was tear-jerking stuff, wasn't it? And how is Rhiannon's punishment coming to an end?
Ah, all of that will be revealed in the next and final episode in the story of Pwych, the Prince of Annwn. So moving on, have we got any listener feedback?
Yes. You know, we've had a really nice message from Ben in Adelaide in South Australia.
Really? Okay, let's have a listen.
Greetings, Gary and Ruthie from Adelaide, South Australia. Just a quick note to say thank you for the shows, the music, the stories. They're just what I need at the end of a busy day to help myself toddle off to sleep and unwind. I only wish you did lots and lots more of them, but patience and good things take time. Thanks again.
Hi, Ben. Thank you for that. And we're really pleased you're enjoying the shows and chilling out to them. I've always found that headphones and last thing at night is the best time to let the pictures build up when I'm listening to something.
Yes, thank you, Ben. We wish we could get more shows out, but they do take some time to put together and edit. And we will get them all done eventually, though.
Yes, we will. I can't believe how many ancient stories there are still left to tell.
I know. Awesome, isn't it? I wonder if we've got enough life left to tell them.
I hope so.
Now, before we sign out with our song for this episode, can we tell everyone about the competition?
Oh, yes. Good idea. Let's go up to Scotland now and the Duncarron Medieval Village.
This is a fantastic educational project set up by the Clanranald Trust, which will be a living, working village producing arts and crafts in a traditional fashion.
Yep.
They've also got a Mott and Bailey up there as well, haven't they?
Is it all built now?
I think it's built. Mm.
And did you also know that they put on some amazing displays and participation events? And as far as we know, they were started by the amazing Charlie Allen and Shore Patrol, one of our favourite pipe and drum bands. You can find full details in the show notes. So, what have we got?
Well, we were lucky enough to be given a Duncarron hoodie in XXL to give away as a prize. It's thick and warm and has the Medieval Village logo on the front and back. Awesome. There'll also be a photo of this in the show notes. So, have you thought of a question yet?
Well, you might know many of the gang that run Duncarron, but can you name Charlie's massive dog, who can often be seen watching the burgers at Duncarron events?
And he is a very lovely pooch too. every pooch deserves to have their mouth watering next to a barbecue.
Yep.
Don't forget to check their website for clues.
Yeah.
Right then. So answers to us by email at garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com, putting the word competition in the subject line and your name and email address in the body of the message. So when you win, we can email you for your snail mail address. Can we get your entries in by, shall we say, Lunasa this year? That's 2015.
Yeah. Let's say the 1st of August, to be specific. How does that sound?
Sounds good to me. And we'll get in touch and send the hoodie on to you when you win it. Now, before we leave you with some music, have you got a promo for us?
Oh, yes. And this is a podcast you'll just have to listen to.
Really? Why?
Well, it's a show run by two ladies, Chris and Isolde, about early Irish mythology. It's called the Story Archaeology Podcast, as they uncover all the various layers in a story. Have a listen to the promo.
Hi, I'm Chris Thompson.
And I'm Isolde O'Brolochon-Carmody.
And we're the Story Archaeologists.
And every month we put out a podcast episode which uncovers the layers of Irish mythology.
The website also includes a range of supporting articles, translations and downloadables.
So come join us at storyarchaeology.com.
My goodness, what an incredible show. You can learn so much of these ladies. We've already learned loads, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. And if we could go back and remake some of our earlier shows, I now think we'd get more of our pronunciations right.
It's all a learning process, though.
True, true, true.
I find myself squirming when I listen to some of the earlier shows.
True.
You can find out more about the Story Archaeology Podcast in our show notes for this episode.
Now, is it time for some music?
Oh, yes. And this song is a beautiful remix of the wonderful Blessings of Beltane track from Wild Soul by Kernunos Rising, with vocals provided by Carla Lewis and George's very talented daughter, Katie Nicholas. Perfect for this time of year too.
I can't wait to hear it. So, let's have a listen to their version of Blessings of Beltane.
Dancing upon a stream, web of pearls of dew, blessings of color from flower and thorn, above me only blue. And the first bird songs from the meadowlands, an inspirational sound, carried along by the morning breeze, waking back again with a fragrant embrace, born of the wheel of the year. So light up the fires of Beltane, the promise of Maytown once more, and we witness the dance of the maiden just as near before. Bring the summer and dance to green, fighter of dreams, maiden of flowers, lifter of veils, friend of my heart, teller of tales. Light up the fires of Beltane, once more. Come and witness the dance of the maiden, just as before.
Well, that was Carla Lewis and Katie Nicholas with a much softer and feminine version of the original track.
Yep. And George tells us that it's the same song that was on his earlier album in a different key and at a different speed, with a clever mix of Carla's voice and Katie's harmonies. The song's been requested for several years, but we never got round to playing it till now. And it'll be featured on the new Kenonos Rising album, out soon.
Exciting stuff. A new album from the fantastic Kenonos Rising is on its way to you soon. As soon as we've got more news, we'll let you know. So I think that brings us to the end of the show.
Almost. Apart from a quick shout out and thank you to AFS Fish, Natty Lizard King and John and Ash for their superb reviews on iTunes.
Oh yes, thank you so much, guys. We really appreciate them.
I think that's about all we've got for you in this show, isn't it?
I think it is. So in that case, we wish you many blessings and say...
Húlvar!
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Podshow, available from CelticMythPodshow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodshow.com. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com.
We'd also like to say a massive thank you to Bruce, Kira, Celia, Dave the Bar, the Dolman, Keltoria, Kevin Skinner, Phil Thornton, SJ Tucker, and Spiral Dance. All of these wonderful friends have given us unrestricted access to their music. More details about each of them can be found in the special Friends of the Show page on our website.
You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.